Welcome to Talking Book Publishing.
Hello, and welcome to Talking Book Publishing. I'm Kathleen Kaiser, your co-host, along with Adana Moriarty. And today we have Ivor Davis, international journalist, author, and actually a good friend and client, former client, who I've worked on for three books with, and we have. And it's interesting because Ivor finds himself in an interesting position. He has two books coming out next year, one that he is self-publishing, which is the 60th anniversary of the Beatles' arrival in America and their summer tour, which is a follow-up to his book from 10 years ago about his travels with them in 64 and 65. And he has a publisher for another book that he's written on his life as an entertainment reporter. He was a syndicated columnist with the New York Times, wrote internationally for the Times of London and the Daily News Express and other papers. But he was talking to me about his situation with all of his dreams of getting an agent, and which he did, and then getting a publisher, and what's happening. And I thought it might be a good topic. So I'm just going to sort of open the mic to you, Ivor, to tell us about your journey into the world of traditional publishing. Welcome.
Thank you very much indeed. Well, I hope this is not going to be too much of a downer for your audience, because I know that many, many self-published writers or writers who want to be published come to you, come to Adana, come to experts and say, hey, how do I get an agent? I want them to handle the book. I want to tell you at this moment in time, I can honestly say that in a way, I wish I had not got an agent. And here's the reason why. So writers out there dream of the moment when they get an agent, and it's nirvana. Well, it isn't nirvana in my experience. And in fact, the punchline is I much prefer self-publishing. Number one, you are in a certain control of things, and you can work with, I've worked with terrific people like you, and of course, Jose at Pedernales Publishing, who is an absolute genius and a guy that will nurse you through if you need to be nursed through. So let's get to right now. I'm working on my new Beatle book, working very happily with Pedernales and Jose. I have been having nightmares. I'm not sleeping well. I'm dealing with a traditional publisher because the thesis is, well, you get a good publisher, you've got a great book, it will go in front of the movers and the shakers of Hollywood, and it will eventually be seen by them, who will realize you're a legitimate writer, and they will buy your book and turn it into a 24-hour miniseries on Netflix. Well, I exaggerate, make it 6 hours. And it's not happening. It's just not happening working with the publisher. It is frustration after frustration for me. Now, let me give you, if I may, can I ramble on a bit and tell you why?
Go ahead.
So you sign with a publisher. They send you their standard contract, which generously says, well, you sign with us and we'll give you 6 free books. Wow, that's how generous of you. 6 free books. That's terrific. And then you write the book and you turn it into them and they come back to you and say, your book is 125,000 words, and normally we print books of 90,000 words. Oh, so what I'd like you to do, said the editor, who has not so far done much editing, is cut 35,000 words out of your masterpiece, or whatever you want to call it. And that is difficult. So I say, okay, you're the editor, give me some guidance, let's work together. No, they don't do it. Now, I must say, I went to see, what was his name? Ari Shapiro, speaking in Santa Monica, California, about his first book. And he was talking glowingly about working with an editor, how they guided him, how we could call them, how there was somebody in-house who kind of nursed him through the difficult times. So far, there's been very little nursing as far as I'm concerned. In fact, there's been zero nursing. Anyway, so that's the situation. There are so many other elements. For example, they send you the contract and they say, publicity, marketing. Oh, yeah. Now, in the old days, and I know this for sure, and I'm sure many writers out there know this for sure, in the old days, you signed with a traditional publisher. They actually did something called marketing. No, they don't do marketing. Now, it's true, there are exceptions. I mean, if you are Prince Ivor, who's married to Princess Meghan, Prince Harry, who's married to Princess Meghan or the Duchess of Sussex or whatever, then you will get a little help from your friends. You'll get a lot of help. I'm not in that category. And if you're Michelle Obama, okay. So, I mean, what I'm saying is, as most of you out there know, and we've talked about this, Kathleen, times have changed dramatically with publishers. And you could probably, I mean, you know this, Kathleen, so I'm going to throw this back to you before I continue with my list of woes. But before I throw it back to you, when we've talked about it, you've said, well, this is the way it is. So why is it this way? What's happening? Are they cheap? Have they cut back on editors? I thought editors at publishing houses were supposed to edit. No, you're the one that edits. And so as a result, I ended up getting somebody to do some editing for me. And then anyway, as I say, this tale of dissatisfaction is continuing. But I'm with the publisher. I'm going to stay with the publisher. I'm going to say to the bitter end, I think. So I mean, I'm going to throw this back at you, Kathleen. We've talked about this. You've said things have changed. Why have they changed?
Well, mostly because of the big five houses and all of the hundreds of imprints that they own have been bought up by major international corporations. And they look at the bottom line. And this started in the 90s. And that's when all of the old-fashioned editors who actually found a writer and nursed them and helped them and edited their book. And, you know, they went back and forth and back and forth. Those people were sort of forced out because what they really wanted was someone to become an acquisitions editor, which used to be a separate kind of position. Now it's all under the global editor title, and then figure out how to market the book, you know, get it to the salesman, get it in the catalogs, and just start a grind. And slowly over the last 30 years, while I've been sort of involved watching what happened, the real editors have been forced out. There are still some because they have the big names. There's not a lot of young editors who have big names. So they've just gone into the new grind. I remember you were telling me that you edited, like I think you said, 7,500 words out. You sent it back and you said, here's what I can do. What can you do? And she said to you, well, you have to hire somebody. We don't do that.
Exactly.
I mean, what are they doing, Adana?
I just have a question, and just sort of for our audience to backtrack a little bit. We kind of gave Ivor's pedigree in there, but Ivor, you have been traditionally published in the past, self-published. I mean, you've worked with editors through newspapers and magazines and all kinds of stuff. So could we just backtrack a little bit and talk about a previous experience traditionally published versus what is happening now?
Yeah, well, again, as Kathleen pointed out, my first Manson book, which was published many, many moons ago, Charles Manson, a book that I wrote called Five to Die, went with a traditional publisher in LA who were actually quite good on editing, but terrible on distribution. And so as a result, what happened was their distribution was miserable. Their editing was terrific. And I ended up buying a book back or acquiring the rights to that book. So I haven't really had, a Prince Harry publishing house to publish my earlier books. But I can tell you that I've done very well with my Beatles book, with my Manson murder book, mainly because I've got together with you and with Kathleen, and we've covered the waterfront. But as you said, publishing houses are not doing it anymore. And whenever we're at one of your writers' conferences, pre-COVID, I mean, so many writers who attend want to know, how do you get an agent? Because this is going to be the passport to success. Well, maybe it will do. It depends who your agent is. That's another story. I mean, again, back in the early days of publishing, I'm talking early days now, 40 years ago, my late wife was a terrific writer. She had a sensational agent who really nursed her through and got her accepted by the major publishing houses. So it's a whole strange hybrid of things. And as Kathleen pointed out, they're cutting back, the conglomerates have taken over. And the thing that I couldn't understand, and I said it a minute ago, and I'll repeat it, that I said to them, well, okay, what about the marketing? And they basically said, well, you're doing the marketing. But then why are they getting 88% of the royalties for doing an ordinary publishing of a book? It's ridiculous. And so there's editing that you have to do yourself. Marketing, they send you like a 10-page manifesto saying, fill out all these people and who should we contact? And who are your contacts? Which is fair enough, you know, if you know people in the publishing and you know people in the broadcasting business who have interviewed you before, it's most likely you'll go back to them. But it's been very disheartening. And if anybody out there thinks that the answer to success, as I keep repeating rather boringly, is get a publisher and get a traditional publisher, get an agent, you're home and dry. It ain't necessarily so.
When you say you're responsible, it's not advanced money that they're like, here's this money, go get your own marketing team, go get your own editor, correct? I mean, no. It's out of pocket money that you're having to...
Well, it's the writer's out of pocket money. In the old days, they used to come up with incredibly generous advances because... Often they like the book. They said, you know, there's going to be travel. There's going to be, so they're financing you. But when a company, a traditional publisher, gives you a rather paltry advance, then they don't have much. You know, they don't have a dog in the fight, if you like. They don't have much investment in you. They've got zilch investment in you. So why should they bother? I mean, I remember my late wife Sally got $50,000 as an advance for a book, it was par for the course. Today, I mean, if you get $500 and a packet of peanuts, I'm exaggerating slightly, then you're considered lucky. But the whole system, as Kathleen points out, has changed. They've cut back on staff. I mean, everybody has cut back on staff, but again, I don't want to blow the rosy dream of your would-be authors out there out of the water, but you have to get real and don't think it's going to be pennies from heaven or thousands from heaven or whatever you want to call it when you've got an agent and a publisher.
Yeah, we're working with a client right now who's with one of the big five houses. They're with an imprint, but it's under them. And since December, so this is June, they have changed three different publicists. The first one who agreed to do some, like corporate, you know, the trades, she would handle it. I would handle, we would handle the rest of it. And then she was gone. That was December. By the middle of January, she was gone. And the new girl goes, well, he has you. We don't do anything. And I said, hold on. You said this was going out to the trades. I put my agreement together because of it. And then we had to go up the ladder. He got his agent involved, who was pretty hopeless. And then poof, 2 months later, we've got the, before the book comes out, we'd had three publicists. They were all changing jobs. And the only interesting thing is the assistant has been the same through all three of the publicists. She's the only thing, the person who's trying to do anything. And they didn't send it out. They said they sent it out, but nothing came from the trades. And this is a marvelous book. And it's like, oh my God, you know, what is going on here? And he's frustrated. He keeps trying to talk. He's also had his editor change on him. You know, and this is not, you know, under a small thing. This is a major company.
Well, yeah, let me just say and added a little addendum to what I've said. Okay. So before my agent got me the publisher that I have, I actually had an interview with one publisher who was very nice. And this publisher, we chatted pleasantly for maybe an hour. And then about an hour later, my agent said that this publishing company has passed. I said, was there any indication why? Well, the publisher said, how many people are following you? Now, I probably made a joke of it, which I shouldn't have done. And I said, well, last time I looked, there were three guys trailing me down the street, you know, ha, ha, ha. What she meant was, do you have 50,000 people on Facebook, TikTok, Instagram, Joggergram, run on your headergram, or whatever the grams are? And of course, I don't, because believe it or not, many writers spend time writing. That makes sense, doesn't it? And so the idea of having to do your own social media, and social media is so terrific. I mean, I'm gonna start a blog called Annoying Old Man Talks About Whatever. I'm gonna be outrageous. I'm taking outrageous classes right now, and I'll report back next year how it works out. Because you have to stand on your head on the Hollywood freeway during rush hour, and you get another 10,000 followers. You have to do outrageous things. This is not circus time, but this is. So if you have 50,000 followers, okay. I guess the psychology is this, and you know better than I do, Kathleen and Adana. Okay, so let's say you have 50,000 followers, right? Okay, great. They follow you as you entertain them, however you entertain them. Then you say, I've got a book coming out in January, blah, 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 blah. And of this 50,000, 10,000 say, oh, we like this guy we're following. Let's buy his book. And this is the thinking of the publishing companies. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. That's it. They know they're not going to do marketing much. I mean, even some of the smaller houses, another client that we were working with for the last 2 years, they have a small house. And their marketing guy, I had a long talk with him, and what he considers marketing is making sure he's getting the books into stores. I said, well, that's sales.
Yes.
Yeah. And then he goes, but that's my job. Anything to do with the press or publicity or radio or any of that is the author's job.
Well, what is it? Why should it be the author's job when publishing houses have, quote, marketing, unquote, departments? They have editors who don't want to edit. Maybe because they got too much on their plate and they can't edit everyone. So it's a sad turn of events as far as I'm concerned. And that's why, we're back to get out there, find yourself a great self-publisher. Pedernales and Jose, he's a wonderful guy who really helps you, and when you go out to sell your books, you know, you buy the books and you sell the books, and you don't give anybody a cut of the royalties,
except the distributor.
Well, okay, yeah, you have to buy the books from the distributor. Okay, buy the books from the distributor, and then go out on the road, carry your own books, and sell your own books, which is a bit of a hassle, but you know, it's okay once you've smoothed the path of doing that. And so you wonder why anybody wants to go to a traditional publisher unless they're going to come up with, you know, the kind of advance that they gave to I keep bringing up Prince Harry, which is like, you know, probably, I mean, obviously not in the same league because they've got a, they gave him a lot of money and they gave Meghan a lot of money to do it. And the book has been a success. So, but all of our struggling actors, you have to be an actor. That's a Freudian slip. All of us struggling authors, you know, want a bit of help. And somehow it's hard. So again, message, final message repeated 58 times, 59th time now, is just because you have an agent, just because you have a publisher, doesn't mean your book is going to be success and your book is going to be a happy experience.
So I have this conversation often with authors of all forms, you know, from poets to memoir, nonfiction, to people who are writing sci-fi. I have this conversation often, which is, you know, being an author, being published has been romanticized from decades ago, right? Where you get these advances and you get to sit in your cabin in the woods and you can write your, you know, your masterpieces and you deliver it to your editor and they clean them up and they get published and put into bookstores and you go on a book tour and you're, you know, everything is this beautiful, picturesque thing. Today's world isn't like that. To touch back onto social media, I think I read it's something like the publishing houses expect 80% of your audience on social media to buy your book. So if you have 100,000 people, 80% of that is 80,000 books sold, right? It, to me, it's kind of a lazy way for these really big houses to determine who they're going to bring in. They're not picking just because it's a great story. They're also picking like, this person has 50,000 followers, we have guaranteed sales, which means that they don't have to do any work to get you on, you know, best-selling lists and all kinds of stuff. But I always have this question, and it's asked to me, and I wonder it as well, is that like, who does that? Who is sitting around thinking, I'm going to write this book in the future, I need to build my social media? Who's doing that? I don't know anybody who's done that.
And then, I mean, I'm asking a silly question because I know you'll come up with some pretty good answers. So what do I do to build a social media? Do I blatantly go around everywhere I go, hand out a business card? Whenever I go to the museum event or a party event, do I go around handing them my card? It's hucksterism, and it doesn't sit with me. You know, I'm a writer. I've written all my life. I've made a good career as a writer since the age of 20. So, and I'm now older than 20 a little bit. So it's hard. Writers, I don't have to tell you, because when you deal with writers, sometimes it's hard to press the on button. Writers, I mean, I'm a bit loudmouth and all the other words you want to use to say that I enjoy getting out there. I enjoy confronting, meeting people, and they enjoy meeting me. A lot of writers are not socially active. So it goes against the grain. A lot of terrific writers hate going out in public. I enjoy it. I like meeting people.
That is the biggest thing I run into with clients, especially when we're talking about social media and coaching and the things that need to happen in this world when you're in the writing phase or pre-writing phase in reality, because social media, to do it organically, where you're not buying packages from people that flood your Instagram so you have 50,000 followers overnight, which are not real followers and they're not going to buy your book. It just looks like you have a big audience. But to do it organically, I mean, it takes time. I've been working with a client for 3 years. She just hit 1,000 followers, you know, and it's been this slow, steady growth process where we're both working it together consistently every week, every month for the past 3 years. So you have to hand out your card everywhere you go. You need to, every time you're on a radio show, every time you're on a podcast, every time you're speaking to someone, mention your social media. you need to go on social media and work on hashtags and other people that have similar interests or write similar things and interact with their audience. So they see your name and people start following you. Like, I mean, the process of it is pretty intense to do it in an organic way to get the audience that a publishing house wants, which is that 80% that's going to buy your book, right? I think that it's massively unfair to an author. The biggest complaint I have is I don't like to self-sell because we're writers and we're introverted. I mean, unless you're Ivor, who's not introverted, but most writers are introverted. They don't want to. It's uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable to be on social media pitching yourself all the time. And you can't just pitch yourself because you'll never grow your audience. You have to. So, I mean, it is 80% writer's life, the things you're doing, the things you're writing, your cat, your dog, your grandchildren, your walk on the beach, and 20% sales. If you go over that 20% sales, people will start scrolling by you because you're pitchy all the time. And people don't like to be sold to. They want to know when your next book comes out and what it's about. But if every post you do is, you know, my book, my book, my book, my book, people will be turned off. So, I mean, there's a formula and it is slow going. And I personally think that from a traditional publishing world, they should 100% be holding your hand through this entire process. Ivor, you have been writing your whole life. You have more experience in the writing world than some people do who are first-time authors, have never published a book, write this great book, get lucky enough to land an agent and a deal at a publishing house. And then the publishing house is like, good luck. We'll take all the profit and you, good luck. I hope you sell it because that's it. We got another book coming out and we're going to go focus on that. And to me, it's massively disappointing as a writer myself, as an author myself. The process is frustrating. It already feels like a world that's impossible to break into. And then you do, and it's still impossible.
Yeah, that's very, very, very good points. I was told certain smaller publishers publish a lot of books because they hope one will stick. So as a result, they bring out maybe, I don't know, let's say 200 books. And they give, they're negligent, or they sort of the 200, maybe 190 get lost in the wayside, but their 10 books are the profitable ones, and that's it. It's like hit and miss. It's send out enough food parcels, and you'll get grateful recipients. That's not really a great comparison, but you're absolutely right. And unfortunately, back to what we were saying, authors are not naturally gregarious. I mean, it's because writing is a very closeted experience. And so it's hard. So it's kind of, the result of all this conversation that we're having is in a way frustrating because I don't want to dishearten your listeners and viewers out there, because writing is a wonderful profession. I love it. I mean, I would do nothing else, but unless you're, look, John Grisham, maybe a bunch of other big sellers have taken their books away from their publisher. They're doing it themselves. Every time I go to a book conference, and they started up again, as you know, since Corona, which killed everything for about 2-3 years, I hear famous authors who've had great success with their own publishing company now realize that they've been, I won't say screwed, but they've been taken advantage of, and how they're doing it themselves. So what does that tell you? Top authors, bestsellers.
Right. That happened in the music industry. I mean, when people really looked at their contracts and realized we're kind of getting fleeced here, started their own production companies and stuff like that for the same reason.
Exactly.
I will say, as a small house published author, like my publishing experience has been wonderful. Wonderful. My publisher is great. She's kind. She's compassionate. You can contact her whenever You need to, you know, if you're stuck on a writing project, she will read through and help you figure out, you know, kind of like a developmental editor. I mean, my publishing experience has been great. So I think that, you know, there are all these avenues to publishing today, self-published, small indie house, you know, imprint of a traditional publisher, the big five. There are all these ways. And the idea that you've made it because you have an agent and you have gotten under the umbrella of one of the big five houses is not necessarily true, in my opinion, anymore. I think that there are wonderful small houses out there that really, you know, can give you a great experience. I think there are people who would say they've had a great experience under, you know, whatever, one of the big ones too, you know, because they get on the New York Times bestselling list, like, you know, their mini series and movies, like Where the Crawdads Sing is now on Netflix. You know, there are these specific books that have this explosion, and probably, or maybe wouldn't if they had gone with a smaller house. So same, I don't want to discourage anybody from, you know, exploring publishing their work, because writing is beautiful. And there's so many books that don't get completed because writing is so hard. It's so hard. It's hard to go from conception to end to edited to book cover. I mean, the whole process is, it's work. It's work.
I think that's one of the things that a lot of writers with a manuscript don't understand, and they keep ignoring the fact they think of themselves as artists. This is a business. Even if you're a visual artist, you got to get your stuff into galleries. You got to get out there and push yourself. There isn't an artist that's successful that just sat back on their laurels. Right. You've got to understand, once you've finished writing that manuscript, you get start working with a private editor or whatever, because you have to have that manuscript edited before you'll get any agent to pick it up anymore. I think that editor is the more important person in your life than who may be the editor at your publishing house. But you've got to understand, this is a business. And part of that business is starting to get social media. You're going to have to participate in this. These people that used to be like 10, 15 years ago, people were hiring social media people to write all their posts. Well, they all sounded like the same voice and they didn't sound like the author. You've got to do it, but you do it simply. It's not like you've got to be writing 1,000 words a day or something, you know, some short little phrase, some little thing. I find picking stuff up from the news and commenting on it, you know, not political, of course, but, you know, just things that are happening gets you into a grind, and then learning how to hashtag. And you can learn all of it. There's classes. We do them through the Writers and Publishers Network. You know, all of these different things happen that you can learn how to do this. And what you have to do is start way out. Just that it's called advanced planning.
Yeah, yeah, way out. I mean, more than a year. I mean, but I would advise, I mean, if we're talking social media, you need to start before you put the first word in your manuscript, working on your social media for it to be successful by the time you launch a book.
Yeah, but the only reason I might question this with you is okay. So I'm going to have a murder book coming out in a few months' time, and also my new Beatle book. Well, the Beatles, of course, have been pretty popular for quite a few years. So I'm going to try and use a lot of the fanzines and the fan clubs and all those people. And as you said, there's the whole hashtags there. But and also there is a passion for true crime. I mean, it's above and beyond anything I've seen in years. I mean, just go on to Netflix or any of the streaming services and you will see 900, I mean, I'm exaggerating, 600 true
900 crime. Sounds accurate, yeah, to me. Yeah. I mean, if you went between Prime, Hulu, and Netflix,
yeah,
I mean, true crime is huge. Ivor, I can tell you for your history between Manson and the Beatles that I bet you and I could have a social media following tomorrow. That might be exaggeration, but quicker than other people, because Manson and the Beatles are huge anyway. Even in times when true crime isn't, people have been fascinated by Manson since the 60s, and the Beatles are the Beatles.
Yeah. Let's re-examine that in a month or two, because I was going to call up Paul, what's his name, the guy from the Beatles, what's his last name again?
McCartney,
that's it. Yeah, I forgot it for a minute, because he is very shy, and he, I mean, talk about the epitome of publicity. I mean, he's got his book of photos coming out any day now, of 1964 photos. And you know, of course, we're talking about, as I say, we're talking about Prince Harry and Prince Paul. I call him Prince Paul, from the Royals of Publishing. And you've got to admire the way Paul McCartney does it. He's on BBC, he's on NPR, he's on the Wall Street Journal with his new book. But, you know, I'm not suggesting that I'm in the same league, but he does it so impeccably. So either I would call Paul out and say, who does your PR, Paul? Or I'll call you, Adana, okay?
I would go with Paul. I mean, over me.
No, but you know what, though? Also, he's always been a good businessman. Yes. Of all of the Beatles, he had the business head.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting you should say that, because you mentioned, Adana mentioned the music business and how musicians suddenly woke up one day and said, hey, we're being ripped off. And Paul McCartney is a perfect example of that. He woke up one day, realized that he was being ripped off. Fortunately, his in-laws, when he was married to Linda Eastman, were lawyers in New York, high-powered lawyers. So Paul got together with them. Paul started buying Buddy Holly music, a Beatle of the back, by buying back his own Beatle stuff. He bought music rights to a dozen hit Broadway shows. So Paul has had a little help from his friends and relatives.
Yeah, well, he has a good foundation.
Yes.
Besides the Beatles.
Yes.
To tie this back, though, I mean, to go back to that artist business thing, right? I mean, I think of myself as an artist when my writing hat is on. I do. I consider myself an artist. I think it is an art. I also think that if you want to be successful, you have to have, like Kathleen said, there has to be some business to it. You can't make beautiful paintings and keep them in your kitchen and expect people to find them. I mean, that's not a reality of any art form, right? I mean, if you make music, but it sits on a tape in your house and it never gets pushed out to the world where anybody can hear it, nobody's going to know that you're a musician. I think that there is also this thing. It happens in music. It happens with writing. When you get your first contract, when somebody says, I'm interested in you, people have a tendency to sign that contract because they're so floored that somebody was interested in them, and it validates them. And it's like all this hope and dream in one, right? And I know this happened in the rap world a lot in the 80s and the 90s, where people signed contracts because they were just so stoked to get a deal, to be able to make money, and that they didn't understand the full contract, right? They either didn't read it and just signed it, or when they read it, they weren't lawyers and they were like, whatever, sign it. And that happens in the writing world a lot, where, you know, you sign a contract and then you're like, what did I do? None of this is what I thought it would be. And then somebody else reads your contract for you and tells you that you never should have signed it.
Well, I mean, that's a perfect example with young and new talents. As you said, oh, they're so thrilled to get it that they send it in there. They don't bother to send it to a lawyer, a savvy lawyer, and they sign everything. And then they wake up, great successes, but they realize that they've sold their soul to the company store. That's a good title for a song, isn't it? A good line from a song.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. That's exactly what it is. You've sold your soul. And for years, I mean, sometimes it's this selling of your soul that it's forever. It's like, you know, purgatory.
Well, I mean, Dana, I can tell you, knowing, being familiar with the Beatle records, that's what they did do. They left it to Brian Epstein to do it. He was canny about the Beatles, but he was not a brilliant businessman. He gave away the merchandising. I don't go into that story. I mean, Kathleen has heard me tell it 98 times or 99 times. How he wasn't. You learn by experience. And as you say, if you're a young writer or a new artist or a poet, somebody says, I would love your poetry, I'm going to do it, here's the contract, sign it. They don't even look at it. They just put their name at the bottom and that's it.
Another problem with that is most people don't have the money to hire an attorney or have any idea where to find a literary attorney to look at.
Right. I was going to say that too. I mean, you know, I mean, some of it might be naiveness and some of it might be like, well, I don't even know a lawyer who I could have look at this. I mean, that's a thing. And that's part of why Kathleen and I decided to start this podcast was because, you know, this world is hard to navigate and we get to talk to people like you, Ivar, who can, you know, bring your own experience in and people can listen to this and be like, oh, I need to do more due diligence, or maybe I don't want to go traditional publishing. Maybe that isn't the dream that it was 40 years ago, you know, I mean, or the only way to get a book published 40 years ago was traditionally published. You couldn't do all of this self-publishing stuff that you can do today, you know? So, I mean, I think there's in the education for us that we wanted to give out to the world is just this, that, you know, it's not always lollipops and rainbows.
Yeah. Rarely. Well, very good. I like that. That could be a song as well. Work on it, would you? But you're absolutely right, because the enthusiasm for when somebody says, we like it, go for it. But you have to look, the great thing about being the members, joining a writers group like you guys do, is you meet like-minded people who can give you advice. And there's a terrific lawyer that you know very well and has spoken at your conference called Dana Newman, who's really a red hot lawyer. She's great. And I know she's helped me over the years when I've just asked her a question. And if I hire anybody as a lawyer, I would hire her. So join, when people send me notes about, well, you know, what do I do about editing? How do I, how do I do it? I say, well, look, join a local writers club, meet like-minded writers who will be absolutely delighted to help you. They'll read your book or manuscript, your poetry, and they'll give you their feedback. It may not be the feedback you want, but at least you have somebody there who has no axe to grind, who just wants to help. And I find that in most cases, and you correct me if I'm wrong, that writers are fairly generous souls and they want to help other writers. It's not you're not cutthroat business here. You know, you tell him he's going to write a book and then he's going to remove, you know, take the competition out. It doesn't work that way. And when I go to writers' conferences, and tell me if I'm wrong, you, both of you, don't you find other writers are willing, able to give time to advise their fellow authors?
Well, that's totally. One of the reasons, too, that the Writers and Publishers Network, because we're a national organization, and anybody, you know, the members can call and say, I'm having this problem. I probably get at least one email, sometimes two a day, asking a question. So I refer them to people. Yes. Because, you know, you need, you know, it's been my job for the last 15 years to try and push out and learn as much as I can about this business, mainly because I'm a writer too, but I realized I didn't know anything about this business. And since I've been through three industries, if I'm entering a new industry, I want to learn the business. Because if you don't understand the business, if you don't understand the terms, if you don't understand what the workflow is and who the different players are, you get taken. In fact, I'm working on an article now for IBPA's magazine, The Independent, about another client who got ripped off so completely by a hybrid publisher. completely ripped off, hasn't gotten a penny from them. And yet we know the books are selling because we were marketing them. And it's you know, it's everything that could go wrong doing that too, because they didn't know what the contract meant.
Yeah. Well, last night I spent 3 hours at a meeting where two cyber security experts spent 3 hours explaining the pitfalls of the internet and how to handle things. And this is a whole new world. And anybody over anybody over 59 and a half may have some problems wrestling with these new terms. I mean, I've thrown meta and all the, you know, all the phraseology that comes with the internet. It's just mind-boggling. It's like learning a new language. But you have to learn the new language, because nowadays we communicate. In the old days, would you believe, we actually wrote a book on a thing called a typewriter. Remember the typewriters? Remember those things that used to click, 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 and you had to change the ribbon? Anyway, I say that because it's all on the internet. They don't want printed pages. They want attachments. And the whole internet business, I mean, every 3 days, there's a new phrase that comes out. I don't know what it is. Do I want to know what it is? Is my mind too aged to absorb it? Yes, probably. Although, do I want to absorb it? So it's a thick Amazon jungle out there.
But if you get into it, if you're sincere, if you really believe in your story, if you really believe in what you've written, then get out there and make the smart moves. Yes. Attend writers' conferences, take webinars. Yes. I mean, even just going on Writer Digest, they have fabulous webinars. We're starting our webinar season again in September, our series. And it's like, get out there and learn this. You can learn it. It's all out there. There's something called Google. You can put in a question. Tons of shit will come up. Ignore all of them that have ad or sponsored next to them, but go start reading what it really means. The internet has been amazing. I don't think I could ever have succeeded with what I've been doing when I really started getting serious in 2008 if I hadn't had the internet. Okay. Because I could find people and connect with people that there was no way I was going to get to them.
All right, that's terrific. And you're absolutely right. And everything you said is 100%, except in the latest barrage of publicity is on along the lines of, is it AI? What's the stuff where you just have to say 10 words about Kathleen and they'll write a poetry piece for you on her? And I just say, I'm sending Adana a birthday card. I'd like to send her a personal letter. I'm going to give you 6 things I know about Adana. And within 30 seconds, I've done it. Where's that going to leave us poor, struggling, starving writers?
Because none of the new ideas are in AI. AI is already just using a knowledge that's out there. They're not creating anything. AI doesn't create. It consolidates and pulls from things and puts it together. I'm waiting because my best friend is attending a big AI conference in Santa Barbara in August, and I'm going to be up visiting her in Seattle. And I'm dying to hear, because she was in the industry. She knows it, and she's been out of it a while now. But she said, we've got to get to know this now. And she's going to submerge herself for 2 days in it. And I'm going, well, when you get home, you're going to spend 2 days explaining it to me, because I want to understand too. I mean, Adana and I got ChatGPT. I always do that wrong. But it actually helps with coming up with some book descriptions and things. At least it gives you a base, short little things like blurbs on the back of a book or your description on Amazon.
You can write something. You know, like I gave it my bio and I said, make this better. And then I copy and pasted my bio into it to see what it would do. And, you know, I mean, it's kind of fun to play with. It's fascinating, but I don't think it's ever going to be able to replace, anytime soon, what we do, because it only can pull from the internet, you know, and it has to be updated. So like it just did that prior to 2 weeks ago when it updated, it was only pulling information pre-2020 or 2019 or something like that. So if you asked it a question in between that, like now and then, it was like, meh. You know, I worry a little bit about creating Skynet from Terminator movies. Like, why do we want to do that? I worry more about that than it replacing me as a writer.
Well, I think we have spent a wonderful time here talking with Ivor, and I wanted to let him go on about this. And I wanted to bring up what, you know, I've been dealing with since December with a major house and an incredible book, a fabulous book. And it's like, you know, you've got to be cautious. Just because somebody says that, you know, we want to sign you, find out what are they going to do. I'm actually putting together a list of what to ask of them. What are they doing in detail? Where are they sending the book to be reviewed? What do they consider the trades? Da 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 da. Because I do not want to run into this situation again that I'm in right now.
Yes, I think that makes it's a bit like maybe they should do it for people getting married. You know, what do you expect? What's your relationship going to be like? Is it going to last a long time? No, I'm being facetious here, but you're absolutely right. And I think, but in the rosy glow of a young writer or a new writer, doesn't have to be young, you can be an old new writer, you know, you need to ask a few questions. And I think you know, through the platform that you guys are, you ladies are doing, then it's essential for people to know this information and to protect themselves. Because anyway, I've sort of gone on enough, and I think you know where my heart is.
But that's exactly right. Is, you know, things like this podcast are places to gather information so you can be the best informed that you can when you go out there into the world to try to, you know, pitch your book to an agent or to an indie house or whatever that path is. I mean, everybody's publishing path is different. Everybody's book is different. Every human is different. You know, I don't want to discourage. I want people to be informed. I want people to take their book, that hard won book, because it is hard, to its best home, whether that be the author itself or it, you know, it's Penguin or Random House or something in between. I mean, my goal is always to help people be, you know, have an information arsenal before they go out there.
Right. That's having the resources and knowing, because like if someone asks me a question, a member calls or you know, emails me usually and asks me a question, it's like, I don't know the answer, but let me refer you to a couple of other people who may know the answer. It's the network. It's all about the network that you have around you. I started my journey joining the Ventura County Writers Club. And that just opened up, and going to the Santa Barbara Writers Conference. Those just opened me up to all of these people. And the thing is, no two writers are writing the same book. Nobody's going to steal your idea, as it's your idea. You all are here, and we all need to support each other and get it together. It's like I like the support everyone's giving the Writers Guild strike. You know, yes. Who would any of those, you know, we wouldn't be watching anything on TV if there weren't writers.
Not a thing. There would be no things on TV, not even reality, without a writer.
I know, watching The View in the morning and they don't have writers and they're struggling to come up with questions. I mean, it's gotten really crazy. But anyway, let's wrap this up. Ivor Davis, first off, do you have the names of your books that are coming out, your new books? You already have A Manson Exposed that came out on your 50-year journey with him and The Beatles and Me on tour. What are the two new books?
Well, there is my murder book. But now that I've give me another opportunity. I don't know what it is. People have asked me to read the book, but somehow I don't want to give it away until I know it's casting concrete with the murder book, because it's been under my skin for a long time. My Beatle book, I'm having fun with. The reason I'm having fun with my Beatle book is when I wrote it, it took me 40 years to write about my experiences with the Beatles because I was so busy doing other things, covering major news stories around the world. So now I wish I had the wisdom then that I have now. I'm not saying I'm a wise person, but you know what I mean. Age does give you a certain ability to become a historian. So my Beatle book will go into things that were happening that when I first wrote the book, I didn't know were happening. It gives you a better historical perspective and also some additional stories since I've met the Beatles again, since I wrote the book and what that was like. So I'm having fun with that. I haven't had so much fun with my murder book, but murder isn't too much fun, but it's a personal odyssey that's taken me a long time to bring to fruition. So I welcome the opportunity to talk to you and to hopefully inspire and encourage writers and authors and poets and artists to do your thing. One writer once said to me, I've always wanted to write a book. I said, well, why haven't you? He said, I just don't have the time. Mm-hmm. Oh, so, I mean, don't give me that lame excuse. Go out there and do it. And thanks to, you know, your writers group and thanks to Adana and Kathleen, I wish you the best of luck.
Well, thank you, Ivor. And if you want to know more about Ivor Davis Books is his website. You can learn more about his books and about him and his incredible career as an international journalist. He's been in a lot of things from, you know, RFK's. He was there at the Ambassador Hotel that night when he was killed. Lots of things. Interesting man. And I'm just really glad you shared this experience with us and with our listeners.
Ivor. Well, thank you. Thank you for having me. You can send the psychologist bill to me for allowing me to vent. Talk to you again.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Talking Book Publishing is brought to you by Writers and Publishers Network, a resource for writers and indie publishers at every level and offers tools to be successful in their writing career. WritersandPublishersNetwork.com.